All right, Trump's terrible bill is now passed through the Senate, and it's on to the House. I just had a great conversation with the one and only Michael Popak about this very thing. Watch until the end for a surprise. I am joined today by the legendary Michael Popak of Legal AF. You've seen him on the Midas Touch Network. Now he has the Popak firm. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Adam. This is a thrill for me. I was so glad when you reached out and said, why don't we do something together? We should.
We've been working on the same network for I've been working there for over a year now, and we've never been on camera together. So there's a lot happening in the world of law and politics that we can dig into. Let's start with some of the bigger stories, then we'll go broad and talk about, you know, some of our experiences in the industry. But to dive in, the Senate just passed the big ugly bill, if you want to call it that. J.D. Vance was the tie-breaking vote. What's standing out to you about this bill and your coverage of it? What are you talking about the most?
I think what we're all talking about, which is you hurt the ones you love. And Donald Trump has found a way to, and his voters don't realize it yet, or they don't seem to care about it. They seem to be more focused on cultural issues than how it impacts them. But $1 trillion cut in Medicare and food stamps, that's enough for me. The 11 million people being thrown off the insurance rolls through changes to ACA and different things. That alone, if any Democrat had ever proposed that, that is the third rail. That would be political suicide and malpractice. But Donald Trump, despite the polls that show he's wrong, despite the fact that the polling is showing that the independents are abandoning him in large numbers, which bodes terrible for him and great for democracy come the midterms, he's just on borrowed time. He knows he's going to be lame duck very, very soon. And he's trying to pay off all of his debts, even if it means rewarding the upper 1%, 0.5% of America and crapping all over his voters. And they won't realize it yet until they're thrown off of Medicare, thrown off of Medicaid, don't have welfare, don't have food stamps. The ones that argue, well, this is an austerity program, right? We're all tightening our belt. We're not all tightening our belt. There's nobody, the oligarchs and the tax cuts for the wealthiest percentage in this country, and all you're getting in return is no tax on tips. I mean, this is the asymmetry about this is so devastating. We have to find a way as a party to better communicate to his voters that they have bet on the wrong horse and they're getting kicked in the head.
Yeah, there's also an asymmetry in the permanence of the tax cuts. So the tax cuts geared towards the richest of the rich, they're more permanent and long lasting. Mm-hmm. And then the tax cuts that he's kind of dangling above middle and lower class people, they go away after a few years. You know, earlier on the live stream, I was live talking to my audience and we were trying to list out everything wrong with the bill. And it was just so much that I couldn't fix it or figure it in one list. It was like flooding the zone in a bill, because even beyond the massive debt problem, they're now trying to create an immigration state. Like the funding to ICE is going to go from $3.4 billion to now $45 billion or so in 2029. Imagine that type of increase. It's wild. And then there's changes to election integrity, slashing of Medicaid, of course, the redistribution of wealth and the permanence of the tax cuts. But there's also massive cuts to green energy. It was like 850,000 jobs are going to be cut from green energy, from Biden bills, and then changes to housing and urban development. It's just top down an awful, awful bill. What do you think the way forward is for Democrats to consolidate power? The midterms, people in the comments were asking me, what do we do earlier when I was live?
Yeah. Well, I know we were on pins and needles about whether this was going to get passed after 50 votes and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
I wanted it to get passed because not because I endorse anything that's in it, but because you need to hold the party and MAGA responsible. Follow the money. Now we still have to get through the House, but let's assume it gets through the House. This is their policy agenda. We can talk about esoteric things like Project 2025. It's another page out of Project 2025. That doesn't mean anything. But when somebody goes to a closed door of a Social Security office or doesn't get their pay or doesn't get their disability or their child goes hungry in the red states, right? Or the infrastructure a package that Biden had signed, but now Donald Trump has defunded, means that there's no jobs in their community. This is now codified in the bill. The policy of Donald Trump, the depraved policy of Donald Trump and MAGA, are now there for all to see. Now, it's going to be up to people like you and me, Midas Touch, and the rest to go through the 900-page bill once it's finally become law and explain to people. We got to talk truth to each other first, right, Adam? Right? Yep. That's the first thing. We have to empower our audience with knowledge. Once they have the knowledge, then we've got to run the bastards out. There's numbers of ways to do it. I don't want to have anybody just sitting around until the midterm election to take them out and run them out on a rail. We've seen 6-7 million people hit the streets at rallies by 50-51 and other organizations. We need more participation in our participatory democracy. And we have to like kind of reclaim that, right? Just the way the Tea Party movement did 20 years ago, 25 years ago, the Democrats, whatever that means to be a Democrat, and you can see from elections in New York, it doesn't mean the same thing to everybody. We're not a monolithic party. We're a very large tent party, right? And I'm talking to independents too, and moderates and everything else. Fair-minded people can no longer be the silent majority. We no longer have the luxury of being silent. And so we've got to do that now. And it's not just waiting, like as I said, for the midterms. There are local elections. There are judge elections. You should think about running for something. Run for school board. Run for your local town council. You know, help, you know, volunteer for an elected official in your community that you think aligns with your values. Help them get elected or reelected. There's lots of things to do. Here is step one, learn. Come. Have a fellowship shoulder to shoulder on your channel, my channel, Midas Touch, and all of that. But then you got to put it into action. And that's what's going to make the difference as we lead into the midterms and beyond.
You know what? I really like the argument you made about this passing almost being a necessity so that people can connect the dots to their vote. Because I think one of the worst things that could happen for democracy is Trump having an absolutely lucky presidency where he sits back and everything glide, like he just able to build off the back of Biden's policies, which were largely good for the economy. I'm not saying, of course, we want bad things to happen, but voters being held accountable for their actions and connecting the dots straight up is the best way to disincentivize people from rolling the dice and voting on another orange freak in the future, right?
Absolutely. Look, we're not the Grim Reaper channel. We're not like hoping for the demise of American democracy but we have eyes and ears. We know that the US dollar is the worst it's ever been since 1973. We know that confidence in the American economy is at its lowest ebb. We know that 67% of Americans in a recent poll, including 70% of independents, are not proud to be Americans under this administration. So we have to, as you said, pull it together and connect the dots. So that when people go into the voting booth, we never make this mistake again.
Can we pivot a little bit to the Supreme Court? It's been packed with a lot of high profile cases throughout this term. It's like case after case, just heavy hitters. How have you viewed the direction of the judiciary lately, especially in regards to, there's a recent ruling about the judiciary's ability to, you know, rule on executive decisions, and that kind of related to birthright citizenship. So how have you been viewing the direction of everything?
Yeah, I just had a good interview today. It's going to be up on the Legal AF channel with Leah Lippman, a strict scrutiny professor out of Michigan. We were kind of going back and forth about what did we just see? What did we just watch in the last 9 months? And when you see the statistics, the ones that Roberts will push, it's that, well, listen to these numbers, Adam, only 4% of the cases were split along the ideological lines. But it was 100% of the cases that we cared about. 40% of the cases were unanimous. Okay, forget that. Let's talk about the 8-2, batting 800 in emergency applications by Donald Trump, including about things that matter to us on immigration, on transgender and LGBTQ plus rights, and on birthright citizenship.
Yep.
He had, you know, the only way you could describe this term is that it was a group of MAGA right-wing Republicans who were hell-bent on benefiting a person named Donald Trump. Not so much the presidency, just Donald Trump. And so there's no other way to sugarcoat what we just watched. You know, we said at the beginning of the term, are we watching the rise of the Amy Coney Barrett court? Is she going to be the right center moderate or something on some of these issues? The answer to that is no, no. Donald Trump figured out in the first term over the Muslim ban that if he made emergency applications, it was a way to cleave the Supreme Court, put them into their respective ideological corners, and that would be the quickest path to victory for him, rather than going through the normal route of a writ of certiorari. And people don't remember, we had 60 other cases that got decided this year as well. But the ones that mattered, where Donald Trump pressed his hand, is the one where he was rewarded for that.
Yep.
So moving into the next term, and we're going to have a lot of things over the summer, a lot of emergency applications. There was just an oral argument at the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals about immigration and deportation and the Alien Enemies Act, which based on the panel, looks like it's going to be a win for Donald Trump back to the United States Supreme Court just this summer. You know, they think we're on vacation now, forget it. They're going to be open for business before the term reopens. So what we're looking at is a Supreme Court that is unwilling to save America from an out-of-control rogue president. And what we think is going to happen is the dissents that are written by Ketanji Brown Jackson, Kagan, and Sotomayor are going to be read by history as being in the right, as they call out in what's happening in plain sight, which is the destruction of our separation of powers, a presidency that's elevated above all the other branches, and a complete, as Ketanji Brown Jackson put it, a law-free zone that he's allowed to operate within. And even though we're like, God darn it, it's dissents. I wish they were the majority opinion. Dissents matter as well to speak to future lawyers, future law students, and to the future. And a lot of times they're found in the right and they're complimented. This court's going to go down, as I've said before, it's already circling the drain of history, as one of the worst courts I've ever seen in my lifetime. And I've been studying the court for at least 40 years.
Yeah, and to build on what you were saying about them being unwilling to reel in a rogue executive or a rogue president, I would also argue they created the conditions for this with their immunity ruling. I think, was it over a year ago, maybe 2 years ago? I don't know.
Just a year. It seems longer.
Like an eternity. But since then, it's been full of rulings. And like you said, the 4% that matter didn't go the right way. The 4% that Trump was able to put his thumb on, such as, I don't know, the recent ones regarding executive power and courts. I mean, this is an argument I have with my right-wing friends a lot. I have a little group chat of a few right-wing friends, and they happen to be lawyers. So we're always going back, and it's kind of like the most raw form of right-wing arguments, I would say. Like when I listen to Ben Shapiro or whatever, I view that as like probably the most raw form of the arguments. Then when I go to the Trump rallies, it's like a step below because they're just regurgitating everything. But, you know, one time we talked before I was heading into a Jubilee debate in L.A., and you helped give me some advice on the Kilmar Armando Abrego Garcia case, because I am not studying law. I dropped out of college like a year ago because digital media is something that I'm really devoting a lot of time to. But I want to talk to you a little bit about your journey overall and what advice you'd have for someone like me. So, like, first of all, when did you know that you wanted to become a lawyer? If you made it this far in the video and you want to see the rest, you can click the join button below. If you're subscribed to the channel, you will see a join button. The rest of the show will be under the members only content. We will be providing a lot of value in the members only tab over the next few years. I mean, forever. We are building out different shows, new IP, new property in Chicago, and a lot of these shows will be free. Every single show will be free, but we'll have behind the scenes content, extra content, and more personal conversations for the members, for the more personal members. So if you want the rest of this episode, go join below. I love you all, and peace out.